You know how people have like an evil cat? I've got a fat dog that's disinterested. And everyone's like, oh, she's fat, dude. Look at that. That's so much neck hair, neck fat. She's a little self-conscious about it. But look at that. What are you doing with all that, miss? Where did you get all that? Hi, Dan Soder here. I'm on the road. Myrtle, don't you? She loves homeless pimps so much that she's just going to give up and go lick him. Watch. And she's gone. So, oh, she's going to her kennel. Damn, she's mad I'm going on the road. I just got back from the road. She's so mad I'm going back out on the road. But I am. I got to pay for her food and her chew toys and shit. And her Cosequin for her hips. Dog owners know what I'm talking about. I'm going to be in Nashville, Tennessee, March 28th through the 30th at Zany's, one of my favorite clubs in the world. So go check me out at Zany's Nashville. And then I'm going to be at the Omaha Funny Bone in Nebraska, April 12th and 13th. DC Improv, April 19th through the 21st. And Columbus, Ohio, I'll be at the Funny Bone, May 31st and June 1st. Other dates might pop up. Go to dansoder.com. See where I'm at. Buy a ticket. I love you. Other comics say that, but I mean it. I fucking love you. No? So we're just friends? God damn it. Damn it. But you've always been a cat person.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, I've never had a dog. But I
Your whole life?
Never, no. I mean, I like dogs. We had a cat when I was younger, and then I had a girlfriend maybe 8 years ago who had a cat, and then she moved in with the cat, and then I got a cat.
So when she left. What's the conversation of she leaves, the cat staying?
Oh, no, it's a new cat.
Oh, you didn't?
No, no.
She took the cat with her?
Yeah, I would have taken her cat, though. The cat was amazing.
Was there ever a conversation about
no,
that?
No, no, I don't think.
Because I honestly think that that would be one of the hardest parts of breaking up, would being like, well, who gets the cat?
It was her cat.
Oh, okay. It's yeah, always yeah, a funny name, too, where you're like, who gets Funyuns? It's like a fight where you're like, you just don't listen to me, Todd. He goes, well, I'm taking Funyuns, and I'm getting the fuck out of here.
That's not a bad name for a cat.
Yeah, Funyuns?
Yeah, yeah.
Great snack, too.
Do you think so?
Yes. Todd, you have to understand something about me. I have a white trash palate.
Oh, yeah, I do too, but Funyuns just never... I mean, if I was sitting there and there's a bag of Funyuns... Is this too deep for this podcast?
No, this okay. is exactly what this is. this is the point of this podcast. For someone that's bored,
yeah.
that's driving to work,
yeah.
that wants to talk, I fully expect people to talk back at this podcast.
Okay.
So I expect when people listen to this podcast to go like, no, no, fuck that, Funyuns rule, in their car by
right.
themselves.
It's weird the way people get fired up about like whether you like Funyuns or not. Like,
off air we were talking about a lot of stuff. I don't know if you've noticed a trend. People just look for anything to get fired up about now.
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
can go like, yeah, marshmallows and hot chocolate sucks. And then there'll be people that are like, I'll burn your fucking house down.
I have a pretty good story. You want to hear a story?
Let it rip.
I dodged the Funyuns question.
Yeah, what did you say? Well, you said there with a bag of Funyuns.
You like the way I say I dodged it?
Yeah. Good job, congressional candidate Todd Berry.
If you poured me a bowl of Funyuns right now, like we were sitting here, I wouldn't do it while we're recording, but I would eat the Funyuns.
Absolutely.
But I would never buy Funyuns.
You wouldn't go out of the way.
No, I mean, they're fine, but if I was going to eat something like that, I would have a Dorito.
You think there's never a time where you get hit, like I just got hit the other week with Cheetos Puffs.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I want Cheetos Puffs.
What do you mean you got hit with them? Like,
I was like in the store and I saw Cheetos
oh, yeah.
Puffs and I was like, there you go. The Funyuns, you got the yellow and the green bag.
Yeah.
And you see it. And I think for me, the thing that would pull me to Funyuns would be going... I haven't had these in a while.
Yeah.
But I don't think I actively go like, no Funyuns, I'll go Doritos. Funyuns is only for me like a, hey, I haven't had this in a fucking long time.
But I mean, I don't even buy Doritos. I mean, on the road, I'll buy Doritos. When it's like,
do you eat like shit on the road?
Well, I use as an excuse to eat shit on the road. Like,
yeah.
Because it'd be like, hey, everything's closed here in this smaller town that I'm in. Look, the Courtyard by Marriott has some Doritos in the lobby.
Dude.
Yes, I have to have Doritos. It's better than nothing.
I will look for an excuse to eat McDonald's on the road. I will look for an excuse to go like, well, the McDonald's is open.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I love McDonald's.
Yeah, I like when there's no choice but to eat at some place that's shitty.
Yeah,
like,
you get to...
Just an Applebee's? I guess I'm going to Applebee's.
You know what's funny is it really is, that's the same part of my brain that when I drank would be like, oh, my flight's delayed. probably should go get five drinks at the airport bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you really are just looking for that excuse to go, like, fate sent me here.
I almost stopped at McDonald's on my way here because I was running early, and I was like, oh.
You're like, oh, let me take some time off.
Because McDonald's, everyone says this, that's just so consistent. Like, anywhere you go, I think. Yeah. I haven't had one in, like, Japan or anything, but.
Yeah. Little Duvall, the comedian, had a theory that he doesn't get sick when he travels because he always eats McDonald's. So if he's in, like, China, he'll eat, and it's like, well, sure, you could try the local cuisine, but if you're playing it safe and you have gigs.
That's funny. That
eat,
is.
Eat McDonald's.
That's really funny. That's a really funny, like, rationalization.
It's, but by the way, it makes complete sense.
It's kind of, I mean, I guess it does if they have the same cleaning protocol.
Yeah, you just go to a place and you go, like, I know what I'm going to get.
Yeah. Oh, do you want to hear that story I was going to tell you?
Yeah, let it rip.
This is about someone getting mad. I was at the Comedy Cellar, this is maybe a year or two ago, and I was telling a joke about going to a cat cafe in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I literally just said, I went to a cat cafe in New Orleans. And I may have said, and it was great. And this woman goes, what?
Yeah.
And I go, I went to a cat cafe in New Orleans. And then I did the joke. Like, everyone was, I just repeating it back, got a big laugh. Because, like, what are you yelling? What?
Also, your low energy voice saying something back. Yeah. The way that your joke structures are. You doing that does seem like a joke. You're like, cat cafe, New Orleans.
But it was also just like, did I say something a little crazy? Or,
yeah.
And the next
you
day,
it out loud,
she tweeted, if you're going to say something about New Orleans, make it funny.
Yeah.
I was like, you're mad. Literally, because I said New Orleans out loud. And it was a nice story about New Orleans.
Yeah.
And it was like I was in New Orleans because I wanted to be there.
You're also just, it has nothing to do with New Orleans. It's a point of reference to go like, here's, you know what it is? You're like giving them a piece of truth where you go like, hey, there is a cat cafe in New Orleans.
Right.
In case you don't believe, that's the kernel of truth. And now I'm going to tell you a joke.
Right. And it's like.
For her to go like, oh, you better.
That could have happened in Cleveland or something. And then I would have said in Cleveland, there's a cat cafe.
Just wrong fucking just city.
Like to be. What?
Someone's sitting in the crowd. And they go, anyone brings up New Orleans, I'm gonna fucking wreck their day.
Just this defensiveness over not even being attacked.
Well, that's my question for you. A lot of your jokes are sometimes interactions with people.
Yeah, they are.
Do those people ever reach out to you? Like,
you know, although there is on the special,
because the special Domestic Short Hair available now on YouTube.
Oh yeah,
we watched it. It's fucking great. There are so many great jokes. I was telling you about, for instance, the salad bar lady who tells you that the Italian isn't good.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever had a situation where that person reaches out to you?
Not from my comedy act, from my book someone did.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if I want to get into it.
But, all right, you don't have to get into it.
But actually the guy, well, I even talk about the guy who, there's a joke in my act, or my former act, because I throw everything out.
He's disregarded.
I write a new hour every day.
Yeah, God, prolific.
No, there was a guy in the, who I asked, he said he was a cabinet salesman. Do you remember that joke?
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe like a year ago, I was in, I think it was New Orleans, and I said, I was talking to a guy in the audience who was a cabinet salesman, this guy yells out, that was me!
That's crazy.
And then I look and I go, oh, yeah, it was him.
That's
at first, I was like, oh, it's some asshole yelling out. Oh, yeah, it's the guy.
Yeah, you are him.
So that was kind of surreal. And it was kind of cool. Like, God, that must have been kind of crazy to.
To hear?
To sit there, like, and some guy starts telling a joke that's absolutely about you.
Yeah. It probably has to feel, I would imagine, like a little invasive or spooky. Like, you're like, I was just saying everything. That, like, someone's talking about you.
Yeah.
And you have no control over it.
I mean, I've also had people, like, think that I'm talking about them. Have you ever had that?
Where people have reached out being like, is that joke about
that
me?
Thing, well, that thing you said about me, like, not about you.
Yeah, I've had that on my comedy.
Not even close to being about
my
you.
My Comedy Central hour, someone reached out and was like, hey, is that joke about me? And I was like, I understand why you think it is, but it's not. It's about this person. And the second I said that, it was cool. But they definitely hit me with some paranoid, like, what was funny is I hadn't talked to them in a while. And then the special came out. And they were like, great job on the special. And you're like, thanks. Like, how's everything? It was like layers. They're like, how's everything going? Good.
And they're brewing. So, they're like, they're just waiting to fucking.
Yeah. And they go, was that about me? And you go, no, that wasn't about you.
I did a joke about this Pilates class I took. And
yeah. Where you said there was you and the three girls.
And I just sent it to the instructor.
That's fun.
You might want to have a look at this.
My mom, I have that where I have jokes about my mom because she raised me as a single mom. And so I tell stories or whatever. And sometimes I have jokes about like her dating my dad's ex-best friend. And I just did a show in Boulder back in the fall, and she had never seen those jokes.
Oh, wow.
And I was genuinely interested to see how her reaction was. And after the show, she was just complimentary, didn't say anything. And then finally at Christmas, I was like, hey, you never commented on the jokes. And she went, no, you nailed it.
Oh,
and
that's
made
good.
Me feel good.
That's
I was
good,
like,
yeah.
I was like,
you don't want to piss your mom off.
Well, my first Conan, I did a joke about my mom dating all the time.
Oh.
And I called her and I was like, hey, is that all right? And my mom was very cool about it. She was like, hey, I'd put you through it. If you can make it funny,
yeah, well,
then go ahead.
She has the right idea then.
Well, there's a lot of parents. Did your parents ever get mad about any jokes you did?
I feel weird. I never let my parents see me.
They never saw you?
Nah, I feel terrible about that.
Did they ever see you do stand up once?
Not in the room. I would tell them when I was on TV.
Really?
It would just freak me out too much. And I, you know,
when it was, so the
and
first
as
time
I'm telling
you
this, I feel kind
was,
of terrible.
Do you what?
This. I feel terrible about that, but
no. But it was there is something cool about the first time your parents see you. It's on Letterman.
Yeah, so I would call them. I go, hey, and I would wait till I filmed Letterman, and then hey, I'm on Letterman tonight.
And oh, tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'd be like, hey.
So
and this is before DVR. Or
drink
whatever.
A cup of coffee.
You stay up.
You're staying up.
Were they? I mean, how excited were they?
They were pretty. Yeah, they were excited. Yeah, they were. I just felt like I was just too like self-conscious.
Yeah.
But I do feel bad.
Do you feel comedians now are more brazen and emboldened to tell people they do stand up? How long have you been doing comedy?
Me? 36 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
I mean, 1980.
It's crazy in every sense of the word crazy.
Yeah, 1987.
Yeah, yeah.
So you watched the fall of the 80s boom.
I never really know. I mean, yeah, I guess so. But I never noticed this
started,
huge drop off.
You didn't know. So there was. So this is interesting because I'm always like.
But I also moved to New York after a year. So
that's about what I did. I mean, I did 2 years in Tucson and then I moved to New York. Where did you start?
In Florida.
Okay.
And it was.
I would never guess you were from Florida.
I'm not. I was born in the Bronx.
Oh, okay.
That explains the edge that I had.
Yeah, that does explain why.
But I lived in Florida from like 8 to like 23. So like 15 years, I think.
So you grew up in Florida.
Yeah, that's what people want to say. I try to.
I love that we got you to admit. Dude, you just tried so hard to get out of the fact that you're from Florida.
But,
I've never seen someone pivot that hard.
But
I'm from the Bronx.
I was born in the Bronx. I lived
Here's the same situation. I was born in Hartford, right? Because my mom worked at Aetna. And we moved to Denver when I was 5.
Okay.
So I lived in Denver from when I was 5 to 18. So I'm from Colorado.
Okay.
So you're from Florida.
All right, it's your podcast. I guess you're telling me where I'm from. That's cool.
Yeah. Oh. I think everyone, I would be willing to put up a Twitter poll to say, is Todd from Florida?
I think daily Twitter polls to really get a good cross.
Yeah, I'll find out.
But yeah, I started in Florida.
So you started in Florida.
Yeah.
And then after a year, you're like, fuck this. I got
to. Well, I'd actually already decided I wanted to live in New York. We come back to New York where I'm from in Florida. Because we moved to Florida because my dad's company got moved down there.
Sure.
And we just, it's like this weird, like, we're moving to Florida, really? That never.
I'm always fascinated by that because I was 5 when we moved, so I don't really remember it.
Yeah.
And all I knew was Colorado. And when you grow up in a cold weather environment like New York, and then you move down to Florida, that's got to suck. If you like cold weather.
I hate cold weather, but
okay.
I don't remember weather, having a weather-based opinion of
okay.
move.
Florida to me is always too muggy. Too hot, too much.
I mean, when it's nice, but then there's hurricanes.
And, yeah.
But it's
a whole bunch of stuff,
too, you know?
So when you were going to do, when you got into comedy, you're like, I will move to New York.
Well, my family and I took a few trips back to New York just to visit while we were in Florida, where you think I grew up. And at one of those things, at one or two of those trips, I was like, oh, this is where I want to live. And I'm not like the most decisive person in the world. Like, if I have choices, I'm like freaked out. But this was like, this is where
you just knew.
Yeah. So then I went to college, University of Florida. Go Gators.
Yeah, and he's a Florida boy.
I'm a
proud Florida boy.
I'm a big sports fan.
Yeah,
I have
dude,
no idea.
Todd Berry. We were breaking down the 49ers 4-3 rush against the Lions this weekend for the show.
I think I know what rush means, but that's the 4-3 I don't get.
It's blitz. Yeah, you got it.
What was the question?
So you're at University of Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
And did you start there?
Comedy?
Yeah.
No, I started after I got back. Like, I never wanted to be a comedian. Like, people would say, you should be a comedian. I was like, no, I don't want to be a comedian.
Really?
Yeah, and it just, because I was in a few bands down there, and I just, in my mind, I knew I wanted to be in show business, but I didn't want to be a comedian.
You don't want to be a clown.
I just, it just.
What did you play in the band?
I was a big comedy fan. I was drum. I played drums, but I was never particularly good, you know? And I didn't, I wasn't one of those people like, I feel like the drummers you see are like, they're good. Oh, that guy sits in his garage all day and plays drums.
Yeah.
Which is what he should do.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's how you get great at it.
That's why he's really good.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And it's also hard just get, you know, getting along with three other people or four other people.
I don't know how people in bands do it.
Yeah.
Because people in bands will tell us, I don't know how you just go on the road alone. And you're like, well, I'm only,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm only looking out for me.
Yeah, it's the, yeah, I think musicians, they know, because they know they can, like, you can turn your back on the audience and look at your amp for 10 minutes.
You could also, like, in between songs, talk to your friend on stage. You go, like, that sucks. Look at this guy in the red shirt.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's the, they contrast it with what they do, which is, like, kind of, not to say hide behind a guitar, because it takes skill to play guitar.
Well, Prince used to actually hide.
Yeah, Prince could do whatever he wants.
Yeah, he would go hide out. So when you were in this band, what got you to do an open mic? What got you to get on stage?
I was always a comedy fan, like, and I was really into, like, the, you know, like, the talk show comics would be like, it was a hot young comic, these new quote-unquote new comics, and like Letterman, I saw before he had a TV show.
Really?
Yeah, I knew about him before. Like, I went to his morning show when we came back to New York once.
Really?
He had a daily morning show for a while.
So you are the definition of I knew the band before they blew up.
Yeah, and did you ever see my viewer mail clip on Letterman?
No.
I was on Letterman when I was 18.
Really?
He called me on the air. And you can look it up if you want to.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Wait.
I mean, it's worth a look.
And it's,
I talked about it on every podcast I've ever done.
And he called you from the show. We can edit this in. Our editors are top notch. I know this looks unprofessional now, but
I know, but you guys have the same people who do The Matrix, right?
Yeah, we got them. They ended up not wanting to work with the. Oh, here it is, Todd. I can't believe I'm doing a plug for a bidet. I was a guy that was like, I'll never use a bidet. Why would I ever have that? I've got wipes. Wipes work well. Well, guess what? They don't. Tushy sent me a bidet. Water up this butt the whole time. Dude, it's crazy how clean it is. I used the bidet once and I was like, oh, I kind of get it. And then I used it again and I was like, I don't know how people use toilet paper. This is the cleanest I've ever felt after taking a dump. It actually cleans your butt. And if you're a man, we're just going to be honest, you got a hairy asshole, unless you're shaving it, in which case, what's up with the maintenance on that, dude? You're probably gonna have little prickly hairs, ingrowns. If you're a dude and you just let your butt hair do what your butt hair does, get a Tushy. It cleans your butt better than anything. Wipes, toilet paper, not even a close comparison. It's all about the Tushy, the fresh water hitting your butt. It cleans your bum 2 times better and gentler than wiping. For the rest of your life, you can leave bathroom sooner. You know what? That is a good point. I know it's like a talking point that they give me, but the confidence in leaving, being like, I'm not streaking up my hands. I feel pretty damn good. Every Hello Tushy bidet comes with a 30-day hassle-free return and a 12-month warranty. Plus, they easily attach to your toilet. This is the part that freaked me out. It's like, how do I attach this thing? Less than 15 minutes. I know it says 10 minutes. If you're an idiot like me, 15 minutes. But then when you hook it up, you're like, oh, now I can just clean my butt with water the entire time. It's awesome. It's another reason why I love coming home from the road, because I know I'm going to get my ass licked by that bidet. I know it's going to shoot poop off my sidewalls, and that's really all you want. So stop wiping until you bleed. Oh. Join the 3 million butts who have already made the switch to Tushy. For a limited time, our listeners get 10% off your entire order when you use the code SODER at checkout. That's 10% off your order at HELLOTUSHY.com with promo code SODER. HelloTushy.com, promo code SODER. Bespoke post is pretty awesome. So we started getting bespoke posts, and make this year your most awesome year yet. I don't know why I'm like starting normal and then going into Reed voice. You could tell my hair's not combed. I'm not doing well today. We all have our off days. But then you get a bespoke post and you're like, oh, this is awesome. Because it's a box of awesome. It's filled with carefully chosen gear from the best small brands around the world. This month, I got, well, here's what you do. Go take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers then help them pick the right box of awesome for you. It's free to join Myrtle's mad because she doesn't have a box of awesome. Get out of here, you bum. It's free to join, and they release new items every month across a ton of different categories. When you become a member, you'll have access to stellar discounts. They use plethora the way I use plethora, which is you don't need to, but you just like saying it. You're like, there's a plethora, and you're like, all right, you got a word calendar. 30% off or more sometimes. Plus, each box of awesome, you're supporting small businesses. 90% of everything that comes in your box of awesome is from a small, up-and-coming brand. Free to sign up, and you can skip a month or cancel anytime. Get a free mystery gift with your first monthly shipment when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code SODER, S-O-D-E-R, at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code SODER, for a free mystery gift with your first with your first monthly shipment. Boxofawesome.com slash, or the code SODER. I almost said slash. You're like, what are you talking about? But dude, I did get like a Terra box. It was made from, I got like a little knife. I got a bunch of cool stuff. They sent me stuff where I was like, oh, you're doing this because I'm from Colorado. But also, I love that you're doing this because I'm from Colorado. So go to boxofawesome.com and use the promo code SODER for a free mystery gift your first month.
Todd Raz, I'm guessing that's just a nickname. His last name is Barry, from Tamarack, Florida. Unbelievable impression of Paul Schaefer. Here are the options: A, fly me to New York, pay for everything, and I'll do the impression on your show. Yeah, right. Or call me, and I'll do it over the phone. So go ahead, Dave, pick either
a real
A
nifty
or B.
Gift.
Either way, I'm sure it will turn out to be a real nifty gig. It was a tough choice, Todd,
I
want to
see
it.
We're gonna watch
B.
He called
call
you.
He did call me. That's me when I was 8. That's
in Florida,
40 years ago.
305 area code. I hope I'm dialing correctly. And this man, Paul, is going to do an impression of you. Has anyone ever done this?
No, this is going to be a first.
Yeah.
And we put the clip in there. What's crazy about this clip is it's funny to hear. You know, I think in comedy, a lot of times it's taken me years to find out what my onstage delivery is, like mm-hmm. what I'm the best with. You're just Todd Barry.
I was pretty weirdly comfortable talking to David Letterman on the phone.
It sounds
and
like,
there's a thing you didn't hear yet where I kind of make a joke that gets a big laugh. But yeah, I mean,
when you were on the phone, when you found out Letterman was going to call you, mm-hmm. were you like, piss in your pants?
Yeah, well, what happened was, yeah, he was one of my guys. Yeah. What happened was I wrote that letter. They had this thing called Your Mail, and I said, what can I get on? And I came up with that letter.
Yeah.
I wasn't walking around doing a Paul Schaefer impression. Like,
yeah. Thought of what's the best thing I can say
an
in
angle,
this
yeah.
scenario.
And then I sent it in, and then a producer called me.
So you just get a call, and this is back in the day of answering
machines.
So you get a call from a guy going, hey, this is so-and-so from the David Letterman.
It's a woman from the Letterman show, and she said, we want to read your letter tomorrow or whatever day. And I said, she goes, be ready at 4:30, 5 o'clock, whatever time it was. And I said, yeah, let's do it. And then, like, they canceled at the last minute.
Okay.
And my parents took me to Fridays to cheer me up.
That's fucking so funny that you had, I'm sorry David Letterman didn't call you dinner.
So then they called me.
At one point, the Oreo sundae came out with, like, streamers on it. And you go, sorry, your favorite comedian didn't call you.
So then, like, a few days later, shortly after, they called back, go, okay, we're going to do it this week.
So they, now that you're a seasoned vet in comedy, mm-hmm. you know they scraped it from the show because it was like a good bit, and then probably at the last minute they're like,
oh, I mean, you could get scraped from the show when you're on the show.
Exactly. But, I mean, as an 18-year-old, you're like waiting. And then to them it seems probably, to you at 18, it probably seems so callous and mean that they're like, we're not doing your bit. And you're like,
I didn't really take it personally.
I would have absolutely taken it
personally. I was so showbiz savvy at that point.
I mean, my God, you already had your delivery. I would have needed Fridays for a week. I would have been like, David Letterman hates me.
But I, yeah, and then that was the call is the first time I've heard. I mean, we didn't like talk ahead of time.
Okay, so they didn't do like a pre-call or?
No, they just said he's going to call at this time.
About, that was all
so
improv
I was by
on
the phone,
too.
Like in the kitchen, just shaking. Yeah, that was all winged.
And so, that shows you how great Letterman is.
Yeah. Oh, he's really great. Yeah, he's great.
So did you, when he calls you, you do the thing, you get on the Letterman show.
Yeah.
Did you tell your friends you were going to do it?
Yeah, I think I told a bunch of people, but this is also pre-internet. This is pre-texting.
It's all word of mouth.
Yeah, it's all, exactly.
So you're like, I'm going to be on Letterman tonight.
Yeah.
Did they believe, and then it gets scrapped. The first time it got cut, were your friends like,
I had enough notice where I didn't spread the word yet. I don't recall, honestly.
Because, man, there's nothing worse than being like, you guys at school being like, you guys are going to be have your minds blown and then nothing happens.
I mean, I ended up doing stand-up on Letterman 8 times, if you're counting. But there were 2 bumps also, and there was one of them, 2 plus... So 10 total.
You did. So you filmed 10 sets.
No, I filmed 8 sets. Okay. But there were 2 times where I was there.
Why'd you get bumped?
One time, I think the thing with those talk shows is like if he's talking to Julia Roberts and
it goes too long
and he just kind of gets into it, 30 seconds over, like you're done.
Yeah.
You're not on the show.
Yeah. If she's yammering about Knob Hill.
And I wasn't on with her, but I remember once that one time. They said we're ready to bring you out there. I said I'm just going to go to the bathroom real quick. They said go to the bathroom. I came out and they're like, yeah, you're bumped. Not because I went to the bathroom, just because.
Sorry, Dave doesn't want someone on that can't hold it.
At the time I was peeing, a decision was made to bump me. But there was another time they bumped me and they brought me out, and I was they came back from the commercial and I'm sitting there,
out on the couch.
Yeah, and he's like, this is Todd Barry. We didn't have time for his appearance but. He's appearing, I think it was at a club in Seattle. Yeah.
Giggles?
No, this is pre-Giggles.
Okay. And they were like, so go see him. So you still got the plug-in.
Yeah, I got a plug-in and I got to sit there and I got paid.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's always a mixed, I don't know, it's kind of that rush. I kind of got a rush when they canceled because they're like, ooh, not anything I'm worried about is not going to happen. I'm not going to bomb because I'm not doing it.
Yeah, it's you know what it is? It's staying home from school.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, nothing good or bad is going to happen to me because I got cancer. I got something worse than getting bumped on Conan is I did Conan. I only did it twice, no bumps. But worse, I filmed my first one. It was very fun. Nate Bargatze was with me. Mm-hmm. The second one, I was like, I'm a vet. I'll go alone. Mm-hmm. Big mistake. I was by myself. I was nervous. I didn't have anybody to talk to. And then after the second guest, I was getting ready to go out. And the producer came and stopped me and went, hey, we're actually filming Thursday's show in pieces. So Conan's going to change, interview another guest, and then we're going to bring you out.
Okay.
And that zapped the audience. And so when I went out...
You mean at the moment...
The momentum. He had 2 guests, and I think they probably should. I mean, I'm not telling them how to book
their show. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like, they probably should have brought me out, then had the guest after me. But what they did instead was Conan left, changed, came back, interviewed the guest for a Thursday show, mm-hmm. and then changed back, and then brought me out to do the set.
Right.
And it didn't go well.
Oh, really? Yeah.
They were just like you could tell that they were like, it feels like extra, like you kept them after work. Like, it was like that kind of feeling.
I kind of had a rough second appearance on that show.
Yeah?
Like, where I remember I did the set at the comic strip the night before and it destroyed.
Sure.
And then one of the jokes just didn't land. And almost the point, I think I may have commented on it. And I thought, oh, man, I'm never going to be asked back. And I guess they're smart.
Yeah.
They know that that's going to happen sometimes and not to punish me forever.
Yeah, I think as a comic, you think, like, this is it. This is the end of the world.
Late
night sets are so crazy because they still exist, but...
Oh, it's... Yeah, it's...
But what it was... Because I caught the tail end of it. I started in the early 2000s, and it was still, like, get a Conan set, get a Leno set, get a Letterman set. Like, get a set together, because that was the ultimate... way to promote something.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time but way back in the day when if you did... I mean, Stephen Wright did The Tonight Show. They brought him back the same week to do it again.
That's crazy.
And he turned into a theater act from a Tonight Show
appearance. I mean, they used to...
But that's like, also, it was like 6 channels at the time or whatever.
But that's what I mean. When you start in 1987, right?
Yeah.
And you're a Florida boy.
Yeah.
And you moved to New
100%
York.
100% Florida. Born and raised.
He's just a swamp thing.
Born at Bronx, you know, Lebanon Hospital, you know, which is in Florida.
Todd Barry, the swamp thing himself, the old Florida boy. When you start in 1987, is it like the goal... Because you've called into Letterman, is the goal like I'm going to get on Letterman?
Because I mean, in Florida, I mean, not just talking like reminisce about the good old days. It was like
That's basically what we do.
You talked
here.
About jokes and gigs. There was no like, there wasn't like, CAA it, was down in Florida.
Yeah,
at in Fort Lauderdale at the Comic Strip looking.
Yeah,
for
they
people.
Didn't care.
Yeah, well, there also, was no. You didn't even.
What's crazy is comedy. I think now in the age we're living is the most profitable it's ever been. So that's why all these people are involved. Yeah. And back in the '80s, it was a nightclub act.
Yeah, and I mean there was like your Lenos and Carlins who yeah. played theaters, but yeah, I your question was what?
So we were talking about when you get into comedy yeah. in 1987, you've called into Letterman.
Oh
you
yeah,
love
yeah.
Letterman. What is the? There's no thought of. So when you move up here, how do you get into comedy? Because well, starting in New York is fucking insane.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it took me a while to even like I did the open mic and it went really well. The
sure.
first open mic.
And this is down in Florida.
Yeah, this is also during the comedy boom. So. They used to do the open mic at this particular club, and a lot of clubs down there, during the regular headliner week. So
yeah.
like Sunday, it'd be like you'd have your headliner and your middle act, but they'd also have like six comics going up.
Yeah.
And so you play to the end. There's a comedy boom. So people are just like, we're here to see comedy. It's
yeah.
a new thing, comedy.
When
so
I started, that's
like you play to a real audience.
Yeah. When I started in Tucson, they would do at Laughs, they would do the open mic starting at 7, right?
Yeah,
but then the show, pro show, would start at 8.
Uh-huh.
So what you were doing is, as people came into the pro show, they would see comics, open micers
right.
going up. So you got, if you got good in the local scene in Tucson, you were going like second to last or last on the open mic. You were in front of a crowd.
Yeah,
and the MC loved it because the MC's like, oh, I'm a professional and I'm following all these open micers. So it worked out on Thursday nights where it'd go like 7 to 10. Would be the pro show at like 8 to 10, and
yeah.
then the open. It was awesome. And when I moved to New York, I was like, "This is fucking a nightmare."
Yeah, I don't
open mics in New York. You were like, "It's just comics, and no one cares what you're saying."
Right. I actually tried to. I mean, I don't say skip over, but I didn't really dive into the open mic scene. I was a
sure.
little ahead of myself, I think, as some people are.
Yeah.
And I remember like. You remember Vic Henley?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Vic Henley.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Vic was great.
He helped me. I worked
big
with
Auburn Tigers fan.
I worked in at the Comedy Corner in West Palm Beach, which was a great club that got everyone.
Yeah.
And he had helped me kind of get on at the Catch Rising Star, but I that wasn't like they didn't love me there, like they
sure.
occasionally, but it would be like, hang out, just like one of the
things. He's like, oh, come on, buddy, just hang out.
Not him. He
oh,
would,
okay.
Like the booker there would be like, that was part of the culture, like hang out, maybe I'll put you on. Like, and you
God,
just,
that stuck around for so long.
Humiliating.
Because I was part of the hangout phenomena too.
You should still be hanging out.
Go hang
All
out.
All right, that was the first poke of the
I liked night. It. But stand up New York, they'd be like, hang out here. Like, just hang out.
Yeah, I don't see what the point of hanging out is.
I do, though, because I was so young when I moved here, and I was doing check spots, that sometimes someone would be late.
Okay.
And they'd be like, Greg Giraldo's late. Like, Greg's running, like, 10 minutes behind, but he's on his way.
There used to be a set at the spot at Catch Rising Star. I forgot what it was called. But it was that kind of thing where it was an on-call type thing.
Yeah.
But where you showed up, they gave you half the money, and if John Stewart's cab was caught in traffic,
it's
you'd
exactly
go up.
What it was. Where
so you'd be like not good enough to get booked on Saturday, or if John Stewart didn't show up, you're going on 9 o'clock Saturday at the hottest club in the country.
That's exactly it. That was exactly the situation where. But I wouldn't even get money.
Standby. That's what they called.
Yeah, they'd give me like. I would hang out at the bar, Wayne Rado, this is when he was booking Stand Up New York, and he would be like, hey, if so-and-so doesn't show, I'm going to give you 7 minutes. And I would get free beer and like a free food.
Yeah.
So it was almost like a food spot, which the Cellar used to do food spots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that was kind of the Stand Up New York food spot. It was like hang out, and it paid for me to hang out. And in worst case scenario, even if they did show up, they would give me the check spot, which is where, for those of you who don't know, during a showcase club, they drop the checks at the same time,
right.
And everyone and a young comic goes up, and I would just bomb.
But they should not do that. But that's a whole separate. Concept.
I'm pro check spot.
You are?
I'm pro check spot.
Oh my god! You're
thing.
Like a traitor, man.
I've
never met anyone
at a showcase club, not a headliner club.
Why?
Well, they gotta pay the bill. They gotta turn the show over.
Yeah.
So to have it all condensed, I think the seller does it the best.
Yeah, because they they drop it. They don't do a check spot.
They do it at the end.
Yeah, that's not a check spot.
But I'm saying
I'm not saying that everything should be free.
Yeah. No, I get it. You're a socialist. No. What I'm saying is, I think there's value in a club having a check spot for a developmental spot for a comic.
I just feel like if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah.
I'm mirroring. This is what I learned in therapy. If what I'm hearing is that you think that it helps. So, but that's just saying, like, we're going to give you a bad spot because you might have to do a bad spot so somewhere else. Like, how about not doing a bad spot?
Yeah, but how about learning? Because I know what I learned from doing a check spot was how to deal with a crowd that is not completely paying attention at all.
Yeah, you can.
So I would go and do other shows. I'd do bar shows. I'd do Brooklyn shows.
But I don't. But I mean, you could find the value in that, but it's. It's only if there was no one doing a check spot, you wouldn't have to learn how to do a check spot.
Can I tell you what I'm realizing right now?
That I got you good.
Not really. But I'm starting to realize that I'm advocating for it the way someone who advocates for child abuse.
Where they sound like a club owner in 1991.
Well, come on down to Dan's in Florida, a real Florida club. We got freedom on the menu. I just feel like I took such incredible beatings. And it made me tough.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely learn. And you,
yeah,
you
that learn. Was 100. I definitely learned how to go on stage.
Because I remember, like, I think, like,
I wasn't learning in the open mics. The open mics, no one's paying attention. No one gives a shit. It's right. Comics waiting to go up.
But that's learning also, because you're like playing to an indifferent crowd.
But in a different crowd. But what I found was that if I went and I did the check spot, I could learn to see when they were paying attention, and then slowly but surely, I started getting good at check spots.
Well, I think what. People wish they would learn is that you should ignore as much as possible.
Yeah.
And
what you will learn, I think, in any business is the ones that act like everything is awesome, even when it's not. And you're like, what a psycho. They always go successful.
Is that a fake it to make it?
Yeah. Situation? Those people, you know, sociopathic behavior, it does work.
But anyway, there shouldn't be a check spot at clubs.
No, we disagree.
So what about headlining clubs?
No, there should not be check spots. There shouldn't be checks.
So, but you're saying, I hate to keep
just in New
belabor
York.
This, you think it should be like a little trainee spot?
Yeah.
Like a intentionally bad spot?
Yeah.
I sort of see what you're saying.
I'm just saying there's so many comics, there's so few spots, real spots at clubs that, like, if you really want to, because here's the thing, I was showing, no one else wanted it. The MC was just going to sit there and, you know, hand on the mic stand. Are you guys paying your checks? And just wait it out. So if that's the case, get rid of it. Do it at the end. Don't interrupt the show. But if you need to do that, if you need to have a check spot, give it to a young comic. Let them bomb.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think I'm winning this argument with you.
No, I'm more seasoned, by default win.
Also, maybe because you're a Florida guy.
Oh. Like that? Okay, wow, this guy. Yeah. I've never, on a podcast, he's telling me to adjust my wardrobe.
I understand.
Oh, my gut's hanging out?
I think
cut that out?
Yeah, we usually edit from like here up.
Okay.
Don't worry.
No, I appreciate it.
There won't
it's
be too much.
To know that kind of thing.
Not enough. There'll be a ton of sex appeal on this episode. So when you come to New York and you start doing, you're hanging out at the Catch a Rising Star.
Yeah.
Are you, ever, the thought in your head of like, I'm going to get back to Letterman is never happening?
That kind of just happened. Like, I think Catch suggested I go up for them at some point.
Really?
Yeah. As much as they didn't really take care of me. I'm going to retract that. I mean, I probably thought I was better than I was.
Sure.
Because you go in there and you're like, you see someone do 8 minutes. You're like, I got 8 minutes.
I mean, that's how I started. I went to an open mic and saw people do comedy. I can do that.
And yeah, you probably can do 8 minutes, but that person you're talking about could probably do 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And you can't do 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So there was certainly a little humbling that I needed. But I mean, I guess at some point, yeah, that I never really thought about, I got to get on Letterman.
You just were kind of like each day, I'm just doing comedy.
I think so. I mean, I hate to sound so purist and self-righteous, but
no, I get it. You
I'm
said
not like
it.
You. No, I.
Yeah, you're not like you, a podcast slut, just going on whoever will let you plug, doing your damn voices.
But yeah, so then they auditioned me, and I did. You know, they used to Letterman used to put you, you used to have to go on to like six auditions to get
Letterman. Dude, I remember that. I remember when Eddie Brill would come around and why, like, by the time, he was like the final boss. If he was coming around to watch someone's set, you're like, oh, I think they're about to do Letterman.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I had friends like Joe List and Michael Che. They got called to do Letterman like unexpectedly.
Oh, that's how I did my first Conan, was the night before.
Really?
Yeah. It was Louis who they needed someone who was writing there. And he goes, this guy Todd Barry's good.
That's awesome.
So they contacted me, and the next day I was on. They came out that night. I did five sets in front of them. And they said, well, you know, we'll see you tomorrow.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And it was just because Louis goes, oh, you should watch Todd
Barry. Yeah, but I mean, it's just, but I mean, that's why you never know what's going to happen. Like, if you think some place, some club's like, why am I doing this club's only 12 people? Well, someone in that audience might think you're good, and they might be able to help you.
Well, something that I grew up, when I was, and this is how young I am, and spry.
All right.
I was obsessed with Comedians of Comedy in that whole world.
Uh-huh.
I got really into that.
Yeah.
And like Galifianakis, The Purple Onion, yeah, and Dimitri Martin, because I loved comedy. I still do love it. But you were a big part of what was the alternative scene, the real alternative scene.
I mean,
like Rafifi.
Yeah, I was part of that scene, and I love that scene.
But that's the question I want to ask you. How much of that was like kind of similar to the Letterman thing, where you're just doing comedy to just do it, and you all of a sudden you're doing Letterman, and you're doing comedy, and all of a sudden there's this thing of like, yeah, we're doing shows that aren't in clubs, and they're going.
Yeah, well. I mean, that was the thing. I never like I never said I do alternative comedy, because
yeah,
I always thought
that's
that
what
was
I always
silly.
Wanted to-
like, you're calling yourself an alternative comic?
Yeah.
And if I someone wrote about me in a...
Well, I have you in my phone as the godfather of alternative
Mr.
comedy.
Alt. I do have Mr.
I have you as in there as Todd Alt.
I have Mr. Alt tattooed across my chest.
You have Alt Life across your stomach like Tupac?
I'm no club comic.
Yeah, dude. I remember... I'm telling you right now, that's when I moved here. And that shit on the lowest level where I was palpable, where people were going like, oh, you want to be a club comic.
I think that was
I'm just trying to be a comic.
The downside to some of the alternative scene, I will say the audiences were great generally.
Sure.
Above average.
Well, because they were going there. They were going there to see something.
They're not eating wings while they're watching you.
You're getting more of a British crowd.
There's more like even like a social scene after the show, which was nice. But
when did that start?
God, that was fucking Jesus. And late in the 90s, 80s, late.
And was it just someone like, hey, we're doing a show at a bookstore, and all of a sudden someone goes...
Yeah, it was a place called Rebar. I think that my manager at the time started it with someone else, and Marin had something to do with it, I think.
Yeah.
He was like one of the early adopters or early champions of it. And then it moved to, I think it moved, then it moved to that place. What the fuck was it? Luna Lounge.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then it kind of
And then Rafifi.
And then I did a show with David Cross and John Benjamin called Tinkle. We did it at Pianos, which was...
Okay. And then so you guys are just trying to do shows.
Yeah, and it was just do something fun and different.
And then you're just hanging out afterwards.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it becomes this thing where everyone across the country is going like, well, there's this thing called alternative comedy.
Well, there's a handful of people who just were like... There was a thing that I didn't like about the alternative scene, which was... for some people, it just seemed like they glorified not trying.
Yes. And that's I'll tell you right now, as a comedy fan, the thing that I hated about it was this, like, no attempt at being funny. It felt like.
Yeah.
Like, no attempt at being funny, and a passive-aggressive attitude towards the audience of, like, you got, like, too hip for the room.
Yeah, and you definitely saw some of that. And I remember, like, I went up at Largo the first time, the original Largo.
Yeah.
And there was like a music stand for people's notes. And I think at some point I did a few jokes, and I turned it around to show that there were no notes.
That's really funny.
I think I'm going to try to do this without notes. Can I see people go up there with their little napkin?
I'm going to tell you something right now.
I'm a genius.
Yeah. A, sure. B, Joe DeRosa just did a show at Gramercy, and he had a musical stand on there.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been waiting to confront him about it.
Oh, my God.
And I will possibly on this podcast confront him about it, because I'm like, what are you going to do? You going to do an observation in C minor?
I was going to say, did you bring your viola?
Yeah. What are you doing? You playing your fucking bass?
There's some people who work with...
Hey, guys, this is half comedy show, half cello recital.
Yeah. Yeah, so but I remember I made a joke about not using notes or something. It wasn't as self-congratulatory as it sounds, but
yeah.
And I remember everyone laughed because I think they're like, why? Because it also, I always thought that looked a little like someone, they just worked all day, you know, someone worked all day as a nurse and you need a little assistant to do 7 minutes.
You need a nurse
same
for
7
your
minutes
jokes.
You did fucking.
Yeah. And to act like it's coming out of nowhere. The thing that did bug me was I think, you know what, it's the same way that I get mad now about people who talk about haters or like, I'm going to get canceled for it. It's like this fake thing that people are implementing where it's not true.
Right.
And with comedy and the alt scene, it really was like, sorry, I'm not mainstream and I'm trying. And you're like, you're not good.
That's the thing I always tried. Like because I would go to Loon Lounge and do a brand new 8-minute bit of some sort. And I would practice in my fucking apartment.
Yeah.
And there's people who just don't even like, why would I do that? I don't know, to be good when you get on stage.
Well,
there was like a contempt, not amongst all of them, but, and also the thing is like, I would see people, you know, do jokes at Luna Lounge or whatever. You're like, yeah, I heard that fucking joke 1991.
I love that.
The Merv Griffin show.
I love when someone's trying to be alternative and they're being just really hacky where they're like, oh man, did you ever notice that women are addicted to capitalism at a rate, you go, you mean women be shopping? I saw that on Def Jam, you know, like just the way they phrase it, where you're like, you're doing a fucking simple bit. That's
right.
I saw someone do a bit recently about like, they go, where am I at? Where are my black people at? Where are my Asian people at? And then they go, where are my Jews at? And then they clap and they go, I wouldn't be clapping like that. You guys said never again on the Holocaust. And you go, yeah, dude, that's like a Shecky Green joke. Like, I've seen people be doing the, like,
so what they
or
saying?
When they go, like, clap it up. If you smoke weed, clap it up. And they clap and they go, lock the doors, arrest them. And people do that as a throwaway joke.
Yeah.
But I've seen people do that now in the year of our Lord, 2024, as a legitimate bit. And you're like, dude, that is a fucking borscht belt joke.
Right, right.
So it's funny to see that it existed in the alt world.
I remember, I guess it's relevant. I saw this woman I used to know a little bit posted like about Tom Waits saying, Tom Waits said it best when he said a bottle in front of me is better than a frontal lobotomy. He's like, he may have said it best, but he didn't say it 2,000 years ago when that was first said.
Giving old
that's
statements.
That's a 2,000-year-old joke.
You know what I love is when they take someone modern and give them something where you're like, that's not even, you didn't even look that up.
Right.
But they could have been quoting it.
Right. Yeah,
it's the pretentiousness. I think it's the pretentiousness.
But then there was also anti-pretentiousness, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've heard the term anti-snobbery.
Yeah.
So it was like, you wearing black? Going down? And that's why a lot of people would say to me, Todd, you're able to work both kinds of rooms. And like, that used to happen.
I've gotten that before.
It was like the room with chairs over there and then the room with chairs over there. And
with a mic in front of it?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I get what you're saying, but it's, if you can, you know.
You know why people say that is because there are people in comedy that know how to pander properly to the right. I saw people that, and I'm not going to name names, but I saw people that got really big through being too cool for the room.
Yeah.
And you've probably seen a ton of people like this. And then the industry believes it because they're just looking to make money. And then that person's career goes to shit because they're out on the road having to do 45 minutes to an hour and they can't.
Yeah.
Because they're too cool.
I think, though, I see what you're saying. But I think the problem also with which I liked about the alternative scene, there was, comedy was often presented in a real cheesy way.
Yeah, it was rolled up sleeves, brick wall.
Brick wall, dumb name for your club.
Yeah, just talking about how much you hate your wife.
Yeah, so, I mean,
it was like real simple shit.
I could see why, and a lot of like, you know, there was certain like roboticness to some club comics.
Yeah, I could.
But at the same time, I mean, I always like to, this is going to be a killer, but I always like to think about like the Ramones.
Yeah.
Like, no one's really cooler than the Ramones.
Yeah.
Ramones rehearsed like crazy.
Played their ass off.
Decided how they were going to walk out on stage.
Yeah, they did. Everything was a rehearsed thing.
Right. They didn't just like saunter out like, song. Like they had, like, from what I understand, if you fucked up when you were in the Ramones, it is a long van ride to the next.
That's crazy. You know what's funny is I never knew that. I didn't know.
That's what I heard, something like they were pretty rough on each other.
Well, it's like, it's good to know that Joey Ramone was like James Brown. When his band fucked up, they got a, he like fined him.
Oh,
like
really?
James, oh, dude, there's a great James Brown clip. I don't think it's at the Apollo, but it's from like 1962 or whatever, where one of his guys plays maybe a fraction of a second too long. And James Brown's like, ah, and he looks at him. And you can just see everyone's like, he's in big fucking trouble. Like, if you fucked up in James Brown's band, you had to pay money and he would fucking scream at you.
I got a good James Brown story.
Let it. I love a James Brown story.
This was really funny. My friend was on a, I guess I could say this is not really.
He's brutal. Dead.
It's not mean. My friend was on, remember Miami Vice?
Yeah.
My friend was on Miami Vice with James Brown. I think Chris Rock was in the episode too.
Really?
Yeah. And James Brown had this line or something like, what were you doing last night? And he would say, spent the last night in the arms of an easy chair, couch potato. That was his line?
Sure.
This is the way he delivered the line like several times. Yeah, I'm afraid I spent the last night in the arms of a easy chair, potato couch.
He goes, cut, James, it's couch potato. He goes, nah, it's potato couch.
It's potato couch.
What's crazy is about James Brown is like, you're famous in a way where no one said no to you in over three decades.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain people who are, yeah, exactly.
Like when you meet famous people like that, where you're like, oh, no one's ever been like.
Yeah, someone like Madonna.
No, yeah, no, where they're like, hey, you look crazy. Like maybe don't wear lingerie out.
No
to,
one's going to say, Madonna, maybe start the show within a half hour of the show.
Yeah, that's wild. I always wondered that, like Axl Rose's friend. If you're like friends with Axl Rose, man, and you go, you don't have to be 90 minutes late. You can be on time.
Yeah.
Because when you're, here's the thing. As my fiance Katie, she's late all the time. I have friends that are late all the time. Mm. It's never a purposeful fuck them, I'm gonna be late. Is I'm doing this and I didn't clock manage why. Axl Rose, that kind of shit, Madonna showing up late, that's intentional.
You think so?
You're a performer. You have all the information. You know when the show starts. You know when you're supposed to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be able to relax if I was keeping someone waiting 2 hours.
I would be, my first song would be called I'm Sorry, I'm Sorry, I'm Sorry. Right. You guys, I really do
and also
apologize.
You do potentially walk out to people who are kind of angry, you know?
Well, I mean, I think that's what's interesting about the Metallica Guns N' Roses tour back in the 90s, where you see it, Metallica was like, we had to put in our contract, we're going first because we're not going to let Axl Rose.
Right,
you go 90 hours. Minutes late, and then they have to go first, and then now we got to play 2 hours later. Yeah. Like, so, and that was like a big part of a problem with the contract.
I mean, I also don't think I'd want to follow Guns N' Roses either.
Yeah, following them right after Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah, I mean,
but when you're Metallica,
you have four
albums to their one,
right,
so
right,
you've
right.
got a set list.
Yeah, they
that,
can
like,
follow anyone. But.
They could follow any, but you're right. Following Guns N' Roses is like, hey, you want to do some time in between? You're like asking Faith No More. Hey, you're hosting. Can you go up?
Can you do a couple jokes?
But Nirvana didn't want to go on the road with them because of that. They asked Nirvana to open that tour.
Oh, really?
And Kurt Cobain was like, well, he had a problem with Axl Rose. Oh. But also their thing was like, yeah, they're dicks. We don't want to go on the road with dickheads.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever turned down going on the road with someone that was huge because they were a dickhead? Like back in the day, like someone that we wouldn't expect, like was Louis Anderson.
He's
like,
he was actually very nice.
Yeah, that'd be funny though. He's like,
hey, Todd, here's how I run the I run a tight ship.
No, I haven't really worked with any like huge asshole. I mean, I've met assholes, but as far as comics, the vast majority are
even the old school guys.
Yeah, I mean, I've never. Yeah, I mean, it's not like open for Shecky Green or something.
Yeah, that's what I wonder.
But
like,
I think even those guys, I've met some of those Catskill guys, and they're usually gentlemen. They're very like, hello, Todd.
Hello, son.
What was that guy?
You tell jokes and I like that.
What's that guy? Berman? Not Berman. Fuck, there was this, one of those.
Some guy named Abe, probably.
One of those famous Catskill guys.
Like, yeah, they're always named like Abe or Monty or something.
At,
an old school name.
He was at Carolyn's once and he was just very like, hey, I like the attitude you have on stage. Like, he was very polite.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love an old dog. I love an old, I mean, like, that's why I loved Vic Henley, because by the time I moved here, he was kind of older, you know, and he was like,
man, I used to hang out with Hicks, and I'd get drunk with Bill Hicks. He was a wild boy. And you're like, I just love, as a young comic, very new to New York, I was like,
More, I loved stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was my Ben Creed. I used to open for Ben.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Ben Creed. Well, I met him in Tucson. He was living in Tucson. That's where he was living when I met him. Because he was a New York guy.
Yeah,
he was here in the 80s.
Yeah, I forgot about him.
Ben Creed. I think he lives in Texas now.
Okay.
But he would tell me stories when we were on the road in Tucson, just doing casinos and shit. And he'd be like, yeah, I went to, I saw Star Wars. I saw Empire Strikes Back with Jerry Seinfeld. And you're like, what? And you're not realizing they're just like regular guys
right.
that like went and saw a movie. But to me, I was like, oh, you had lunch with Superman? It was nuts.
Yeah, I remember remember Barney Miller, the show? Barney?
Yeah.
Like, you remember Steve Landisberg?
No.
Who was he on the show? Fuck, I forgot.
Who was he guy on the Barney
Anyway,
Miller?
He did stand up and they were like at the Comedy Corner in Westmont, like, hey, can you drive him to his hotel? Like, yo,
you're like, what the fuck? That was like the guy that played Biff in Back to the Future. Tom, it's not Tom Jones. He's a comedian.
Oh.
Tom, he's very nice, but I've never worked with him. But Joe List worked with him. Joe List is a huge Back to the Future fan.
Uh-huh.
And this is like 15 years ago. And I was like, you got to work with Biff? And he goes, you're not allowed to talk about it. I said, what? He said, in the green room. You're not allowed to bring up that he was Biff on Back to the Future. And you're like, son of a bitch. That's the only thing I want to talk about. You think I want to talk about bits with you? I want to know what it's like to be covered in manure. Was that real manure? Dude, I appreciate you coming and hanging out.
We're done?
Yeah. Domestic Short Hair is the special on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's fucking awesome. It is. Man, I watched it I was like, you know, I watch the specials and I'm always like, yeah, it's going to be pretty good. I usually enjoy it, but those fucking jokes are so tight.
Thank you.
And it's so funny. Like I said, the Italian dressing joke really made me laugh hard.
Thank you.
Moreland Wiley is a big fan of yours. I don't know if you know that. And I heard John Long's coming out to a couple shows. Toddberry.com.
Yeah, and I'm on tour, so check that out.
Live. Go
see
Todd.
We didn't talk about
live.
Crowd work at all. Holy shit.
Well, yeah. Everyone talks about crowd work.
Yeah, you're right. We don't have to talk about it.
And without Todd Berry, there's no Matt Rife. Remember that.
Yeah.
He laid the scene. You remember Alt General Todd Berry? You remember the Commodore of the Alt scene, as Todd says off air? It would be fun. I'm going to make it seem like you pushed that we talked about it. He said he would only come on here if we talked about the Alt scene.
If you refer to me as an alt comic, I just, that's one thing I ask, is I need to be very personal.
My favorite, obviously, appearance of yours in anything was Bob's Burger as the cow.
Oh, Melissa, yeah.
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 I loved that. I was very high in my apartment in Queens watching Bob's Burgers, and I went, that's Todd Berry.
You could try watching it not high, maybe.
Nah, I'm good. Also, Delocated.
Yeah.
That show was that was my shit.
Yeah?
I loved Delocated. And the whole introduction of Eugene Merman and you and his brother being the badass Russian mobster that hated you.
Yeah.
Was that guy cool?
Who?
The guy that put the Russian mobster?
Yeah, yeah. He was really
cool. That was fun?
Yeah.
I loved that. I fucking love. Is that streaming anywhere?
I get residual, so I think it is.
Dude, I'm looking up. Delocated was so goddamn funny.
Thank you.
I just remember the episode.
I take full responsibility for you enjoying that show.
Yeah, when John's character goes through the sandwiches because he's trying to get the punch card of the 10th sandwich, might be one of my favorite episodes of anything I've ever watched. You rule, Todd. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, dude.